Public Defender's Office on behalf of the defendant Juan Castaneda, who is here based on appealing the resentencing that occurred pursuant to this court's dictate as a result of the Miller case. As you recall, this case was pending when Miller came out, so it wasn't even a question of having to wait for Montgomery to say it was going to be applied to cases where the judgment wasn't final. In this case, the defendant, Juan Castaneda, was 15 years old at the time of this offense. I'm sure the court is well aware from the record this was a spree that occurred in one evening, and the two homicides were based on felony murder, and the attempted homicide for which he was convicted, although it obviously wasn't a felony murder because the person who shot his guy was based on the same type of thought processes were going on. Basically, the sentence that was originally given by Judge Hartigan at the trial level was obviously the life sentences that were required, and he ran them concurrently. Judge Battalion, although he gave the minimum number on the homicide cases, ran the cases, the sentences consecutively. I'll address that in a moment. Once again, as a result of the legislature's reworking the sentencing structure or the sentencing scheme for juveniles convicted of homicide, we engaged in a lengthy evidentiary hearing in front of Judge Battalion. Of course, Judge Battalion didn't have the benefit of having seen the trial. And this case is a little different than the other ones you've been dealing with because Mr. Castaneda has been incarcerated now for 7 years, whereas the other cases you were talking about earlier today were decades in prison. So it's a little, I think there's a little different approach that we have to, that I think I have to take.
Under the sentences given, when would the prisoner be eligible for parole?
Under the sentences we interpret it, and as the penitentiary has interpreted it, his parole eligibility will be when he is at the age of 68, and his mandatory release will be the age of 78, which would mean he would serve 53 years in prison before he's eligible to be released under the sentences as they currently are in place.
Counsel, where we have a case with multiple first-degree murders, aren't we talking a little bit apples and oranges? Because if you can commit, let's say, 10 murders, and we still have to, let's just say for argument's sake, you say 60 years again in this case. Doesn't that promote people to go ahead and commit multiple murders?
I see your point, and let me just say that when I use the number 60 in Garza's case, because we have the benefit of hindsight in looking at it. That's why I said in his case, we have information that would say that a reasonable penalty in that case would be 60 or 30.
I don't disregard 60. Maybe I shouldn't have even said that. But my point is, aren't you promoting multiple murders if, because they're combined in one case, you say, well, then a meaningful opportunity at release is age 50, for example. Whatever the age is, it doesn't matter. My point is that don't you have to consider each homicide separately in that meaningful opportunity for parole?
Well, I certainly agree that each case has to be weighed on its own merits. Yes, I totally agree with that. And I see your point, saying, well, then if you commit one, you might as well commit 20. I don't know that I agree with that concept, but I see your point. And if the point is that each case has to be viewed in a separate light that is unique to the defendant and unique to the facts of the case, I totally agree with that statement. And that's what I think we have to do in this case. Let's look at what the statute requires for the sentencing. Once again, we have a situation where the only evidence presented at the sentencing hearing was presented by us. There's no prohibition on the state from having their own independent evaluations to contradict the favorable results that we got. They remain uncontradicted.
Okay, suppose the sentence was 60 years for the first murder, and 60 years, you said 60 would be a more reasonable sentence because of parole eligibility of 30, right?
Oh, in Garza's case, yes.
Yeah, all right, so you had 60 in this case for the first murder, and 60 in the second murder, and some sentence for the attempted second-degree murder in the third count, and you made them all consecutive, would that be an abuse of discretion?
If you made them all consecutive or concurrent?
Consecutive.
Well, that's what he did in this case, though. Yeah. I'm saying that, yes, it is. Just as I said in Garza, I think it's an abuse of discretion, and I also think that it's de facto life sentence, as I argued previously, and I also think that it violates the tenets of North Carolina v. Pierce, which I argued in the brief.
Isn't that saying that the second murder and the second attempt are nothing in this case because they're going to be served concurrently?
Oh, I'm not saying they're not.
Well, there wouldn't be any punishment for them.
Of course there's a punishment.
No, there wouldn't if they're going to be served concurrently.
Well, under your theory, then every time a defendant gets a concurrent sentence, you're saying that the judge is not punishing them for the second crime.
Well, we always review for abuse of discretion, but in this case, if you don't have a consecutive sentence, then you're not recognizing any punishment for the other crimes.
Well, I think you have to look at the numbers in their entirety. That's what I don't think that you just say, well, wait a minute, since they're concurrent, why did the judge give them concurrent time in the first place? Was he giving them two freebies? I don't think so. I think the point is
wasn't he giving him life imprisonment for the murder charge?
I didn't hear that.
He gave him life imprisonment for the first murder charge.
That's true.
So he gave him life imprisonment for the second murder charge, ran him concurrently. Life is still life if it's consecutive or concurrent.
Right.
There's no eligibility for parole, so he's not giving him a freebie in that respect.
Well,
is that correct?
I'm just saying that under the way Judge Wright posited it, it was saying, well, you're not getting punished for the crime, and it's a freebie.
Going to North Carolina versus Pence, aren't you saying that this is a more severe sentence the second time around than the first time?
I'm saying that it's a more severe sentence in that it was consecutive instead of concurrent.
Okay.
I understand.
But it was life
I
the
understand.
First time. This is not like the second time.
I'm not trying to say that this is an easy argument for me to make to try to convince you that.
But it's not a plausible argument, I think.
But I'm saying that if you give someone a concurrent sentence initially, and then you give them a consecutive sentence initially, I'm saying that the tenets of the North Carolina.
What about the concurrent sentence being wrong when it was supposed to be consecutive with the use charge?
Say,
the use of the weapon.
The first time around, me?
Right.
Yes.
He ran it concurrent.
The
second time he runs it consecutive.
Well, he has to.
That is more than the first time.
Understood. But
you don't get the benefit of North Carolina, do you?
But I think there's a difference between a erroneous sentence versus one that I'm just saying is...
So that doesn't go to that issue.
No,
it only goes to the life sentence.
Yes.
Consecutive versus concurrent.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Right.
That when you give concurrent sentences, and then subsequently give consecutive sentences, then I think that the Supreme Court opinion in North Carolina does come into play. And like I said, I'm not trying to look you in the eye and say, hey, this is an easy one for me to make.
Mr. Riley, do you think there is anything in the Miller and Montgomery line of cases that would preclude multiple homicides from being within the small class of cases that the U.S. Supreme Court expects that a juvenile could be sentenced to life?
Would it preclude it? No, I don't think it would preclude it. If you're asking me, does the same analysis apply whether there's multiple murders or not? I think under Miller Montgomery, I think the answer to that is yes. The same analysis has to apply. Of course you have to consider that there's multiple incidents. This was all in one evening, as I said. He's not the shooter. There's no ever any allegation that Juan Castaneda was the person who pulled the trigger. Keep in mind that one person who is certainly under the felony murder rule, just guilty, walked because he made a deal with the state. And this kid was the youngest one. He was 15.
But you don't read anything in Miller
or Montgomery to suggest, as long as the sentencing court goes through the analysis, considers all of the factors, but determines that the multiple homicide is a factor that demonstrates the exceptional depravity, you wouldn't quarrel with that.
Well, I don't think that the way you posed the question, I would be less than candid if I said that the court couldn't consider that. Of course they can.
The statute anticipates the possibility.
That's right. I mean, I doubt this will be the first multiple homicide case that we'll all be dealing with these kind of issues. And
what would you suggest the court do in those cases if we're going to have some subsequent similar cases in which there are multiple homicides committed by a juvenile, and you argue that 60 years should be the maximum sentence given in order to be reasonable for not giving a life sentence? In other words, they get 30 out, could be paroled out in 30, if they killed more than one person.
Like I said, the 60 was when I was asked in Chris Garza's case. I'm not saying that 60 is the appropriate number in this case, because we don't have the benefit of looking back at 26 years of imprisonment to see what the evidence is as to how he's going to act. I can tell you that at the evidentiary hearing in this case, Mr. Castaneda, who was, as I said, 15 when he went into jail at first, because of his age and some problems with other prisoners, they put him in solitary. And I'm sure when you read the record, he totally lost his marbles in there. He was naked, eating his own feces. This is what the prison does to young people. And what I'm saying to you is, as demonstrated by the number of cases that I've already had that we didn't appeal, and by Mr. Garza's situation, 26 years in prison from 16 years, I have to admit, it works. This guy has totally changed his life around. And I think Juan Castaneda is someone who is in the same boat. He was just as indicated in the previous argument, the lack of maturity, the peer pressure, in this case, is overwhelmingly present. And once again, when we don't present evidence, when we don't make an argument, the court is quick to remind us that you didn't do anything. Well, the state did nothing. They just say, we didn't even make a sentencing recommendation.
Mr. Riley, I realize you've gone over time, but I want to...
Sorry.
As in a couple of these cases, we have the benefit of looking with hindsight.
Yep.
Going forward, we're not going to have that benefit. What's a trial judge supposed to do?
That's a much more difficult situation. I totally agree with you. And the answer to that question is, the trial judge is supposed to evaluate the information that it has. And I'm not just talking about a PSI like you do in a burglary. As I said, the statute talks about the outcome of a comprehensive mental health evaluation of the convicted person conducted by an adolescent mental health professional licensed in this state. That's what we did. And his conclusions were such that the risk of future dangerousness is minimal, that he would be amenable to correction in prison. As a matter of fact, the evidence showed that since he'd got himself straightened out with his mental health and been on meds, he's obtained paralegal degree with a 99% average.
Again, with the benefit of hindsight.
That much we have hindsight on. But
so
the statute contemplates...
Going forward, what we're really going to be faced with are the dueling experts.
If you have dueling experts.
If the state puts on evidence to the contrary.
That's true. And then just like trial courts do all the time, they assess the credibility of the expert witnesses and make findings based on that. And in this case, and in all the cases that we've had, honestly, the state did zip on this. They asked for nothing. They just relied on the state's on the trial record or the PSI, and that's it. We presented a significant amount the hearing lasted, I think, a day or a day and a half in this case. And presented all sorts of evidence of what was going on in the penitentiary, what his school records were, his mental health history, his family history, all the things that the statute contemplates. And, you know, I do think...
Well, the statute also contemplates the criminal act.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's what that's what the state's putting their emphasis on.
Right, but I mean, I think that the courts in some of the cases I cited earlier are talking about just relying on the facts of the case in these kind of things isn't going to be enough to satisfy the requirements when they've decided that children are different, juvenile sentencings are different and have to be evaluated in light of these things.
Thank you.
Thanks again for letting me answer your questions. I'm going over. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Faust, good morning to you.
May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Stacey Faust, Assistant Attorney General, representing the Appalachian State of Nebraska. Chastain's case is different. It's different because than those you just heard, because he was convicted of 8 offenses against 3 victims in 3 separate shootings. And he needs this court to apply Miller to his new aggregate sentence because I think it bears emphasis that he got the minimum sentence on each of his 2 homicide convictions. He got 40 to 50 years on each of them. And he needs this court to order concurrent sentences for the same reasons. His claim fails for many reasons. Essentially, what he really wants this court or the trial court to do...
I'm sorry, you said he needs this court to order concurrent sentences?
In order to have any valid Miller claim to get to the aggregate sentences.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. But essentially what he wants this court is to reapply Miller. But he already got the relief he was entitled to. He got the discretionary Miller hearing. Neither Miller nor Montgomery directs this court or the trial courts how to balance the factors, how to weigh those factors.
What would be his mandatory discharge date? How many?
68 years old. Oh, I'm sorry. Parole eligibility, 68.
He'd be parole eligible at 68 and mandatory discharge at 78?
I believe so. And that, again, is assuming you aggregate the sentences because the state believes you really should just be looking at the homicide conviction. Miller did not speak to aggregate term of year sentences. Miller was limited to mandatory life without parole on homicide conviction. Like I said, we're looking at the sentences on the homicides here. He's got 40 to 50 years on each of them. Miller did not speak to concurrent versus consecutive sentences for multiple convictions involving multiple victims. It's always been within the discretion of the trial court to order concurrent versus consecutive sentences for separate crimes. Miller had no effect in that area. And Castaneda didn't get life without parole. He's not one of those rare juveniles whose crimes reflect irreparable corruption. And that's evidenced by the minimal sentences that he received and by the trial court's comments at sentencing. He was considering it as a whole. He considered the nature of offenses. He considered his age. He considered he was not the shooter. He considered Miller and the science behind it. He considered all the factors, and really, that's all that it was his job to do. And it should only be reversed for an abuse of discretion. And he has not shown that here. And Justice Wright, you're correct. He is asking this court to essentially ignore a portion of his offenses and his victims. Again, Miller didn't require this. It was about a single homicide conviction in which the defendant got mandatory life without parole. Here in Miller, a juvenile didn't engage in a crime spree and then have some of his offenses or victims discounted. Such a position is not supported by Miller. But a position does violate the role of the legislature, which decides the penalty for each offense. And here there was 8 of them, and he should be penalized for every single one of them.
Would there be any prohibition had the trial court on the murder convictions done 40 to 50 on each concurrent?
No. No, absolutely within his discretion to do either or. As for the vindictiveness, it doesn't apply here. Kathleen is eligible for parole now in 52 and a half years. He got life without parole before, and as this court determined on direct appeal, that offered him no meaningful opportunity to obtain release. He does have that now in 52 and a half years. But frankly, for a more important reason, he was sentenced by 2 different judges. First time by Judge Hardigan, and the second by Judge Battalion. And so he has to show actual vindictiveness, which he cannot do here. And I think will be reflected by Judge Battalion's comments on the record that he thoroughly thought through Castaneda's new sentence. No further questions?
Does Graham versus Florida have anything to do with this case?
No. No, because there is homicide involved. State's position is once that, you're taken into Miller.
Even though there's the other charges are not homicide offenses?
Yes, you're taken out of Graham as soon as there's a homicide conviction. That's the state.
That just clears it out completely?
Yes. Thank you. We ask you for permission to this report.
Thank you. There is no time for rebuttal, so we will go on to the next case of the day, which is In Re Estate of Baldwin.